It is Thursday morning and time to say hello to Jared Bowen. Good morning, Jared.
Good morning, Bob.
Lots to talk about, and it's not too early to talk about Christmas. In fact, that's our first topic, A Christmas Story, which, of course, is the classic Gene Shepherd story about his Christmas in Indiana or Illinois, wherever it was. It's been made into a movie and now a musical.
Yeah, and I have this whole morning, I have sort of a family theme for you. So we start off with A Christmas Story. It actually just opened at the City Wang Theater. I'm seeing the official opening tonight, but I do have a sort of a backstage preview because I was able to talk to Dan Loria, the father in The Wonder Years, who is a star.
Yes,
but you're right. And it's Indiana, set in the 1940s Indiana. And, of course, it's all about Ralphie Parker, who just wants a Red Ryder BB gun from Santa for Christmas. And, of course, you're treated to the rest of his adventures between his brother getting his tongue stuck on the telephone pole or the friend, I should say. And then, you know, his brother in his, you know, big puffy suit that he can't wear. He can't put his arms down. So it's all these stories about growing up in the 1940s and just wanting a simple little life in your home. And basically, this breaks out into a musical adaptation. It's the first time that this film has been adapted. And actually, interesting, Peter Billingsley, who played Ralphie in the movie, is a producer here. And he said this is the first time he's allowed a project like this to happen because he felt so good about it. But as I mentioned, I did talk to actor Dan Loria, who plays the narrator Gene Shepherd, looking at the theme of the show through the prism of his own childhood.
I grew up in an era where, you know, we got one present for Christmas. You always got your socks and your pants and your underwear, but then you got one present. And you usually knew what it was because your father came, "What do you want for Christmas?" "I could use a new glove, Dad." "Okay, I'll see what I can do." And you got a glove, you know. Well, this is really a boy. He doesn't care about all the other stuff. He really wants this one gift. And, of course, you know, everybody knows I'm not giving anything away. Father comes through. You know, Dad comes through.
Yeah. Okay.
It's very heartwarming. And the one difference here is that you wonder, how could A Christmas Story possibly be a musical?
Yeah.
And basically, they've explained to me, every time Ralphie has one of those big fantasies that you see alluded to in the film or the story, those are the big production numbers in the show.
That's where they took off with the music.
Yeah.
Do they have one about the kooky leg lamp?
Oh, they have a kick line with the leg lamp. I have seen clips to see that. I think it's going to be a really fun show.
Great.
Did very well in New York last year, even gathered a couple Tony nominations.
Really? Okay, so that's A Christmas Story, the musical version, at the City Wang Theater through December the 8th. Next, we turn to The Cocktail Hour, the A.R. Gurney classic, and that's being done at the Huntington Theater Company.
Yes, well, continuing our family theme. So first we have the heartwarming family. Now we have the struggling family who dwells upon The Cocktail Hour. And I should point out that I saw this on the final preview performance because I wasn't able to make the opening last night. So this is when they're still trying to finalize the show before the actual opening. The Cocktail Hour sets us down in a very waspy 1970s family in Buffalo, New York. And this is a family who lives for and dwells in the cocktail hour. They have their very well-appointed living room. They look forward to that time of the day when they can get together, sort of the alcohol eases pain, it eases struggles, makes everything just a little bit better, and it also brings family together as families, quote-unquote, should be brought together. And then suddenly their son comes home. He's a playwright, a struggling playwright, and tells his family that he's written a play about them. And, of course, a waspy family doesn't want to see themselves portrayed in any light on stage whatsoever. And this is actually, from what I understand, a fairly autobiographical play from A.R. Gurney. He had parents who didn't really appreciate what he was doing as a playwright, so he's written about it here. I have to say, to be honest, I struggled with this. I didn't find the story completely compelling. I'm not quite sure why the Huntington has revived it, given that this is a story that was also told rather similarly in other desert cities, which played in New York and in Boston last year. But what I will say is it is worth the price of admission for Maureen Anderman, who's a Tony nominee. She plays the mother here. And she is so brilliant. She's masterful because she has this steely reserve. And I don't mean to say that she's cold in her character at all, but she's just somebody who's protecting herself. And of course, the cocktail hour helps her. And then there are these just moments as she has this great conversation with her son about what he's doing and what her own history has been, where you see that steely reserve start to wither just a little bit. She doesn't break down. It's not dramatic. But then you see her pull it back. back together. And the way Maureen Anderman does it is award-worthy. Hmm. She's brilliant.
All right. Maureen Anderman, standout in the Cocktail Hour, presented by the Huntington Theater Company, playing at the BU Theater through December 15th. Next. Really, an opera about Lizzie Borden?
Yes, you see our family trajectory really devolving here. So, the Boston Lyric Opera is staging a more contemporary version of Jack Beeson's 1965 opera, Lizzie Borden, and they've condensed it. It's a 90-minute production, and this is part of their Opera Annex series that they do every year where they take the opera out of the Schubert Theater and put it in a different space. Here it's at the Castle at Park Plaza. So what they've done with this story is they've given it a 70s bent. And so you have this raked stage which comes at you, and it's just the linoleum floor. You have the table. You have them in their 70s costumes. You have this cockeyed black and white picture of the actual Lizzie Borden house from Fall River, Massachusetts that looms over the stage. And it couldn't be more engaging. The way you feel like you're, because everything is so sort of askew and slanted and tilted, you feel like you're diving into Lizzie Borden's mind, and everything that you're seeing is her version of events unfolding. I did talk to performer Heather Johnson on her take on Lizzie Borden in the opera, which takes liberties with the facts and is intentionally constructed as a very great night of drama.
Lizzie is very much a victim, in my opinion, of her surroundings and sort of her very controlling father and the death of her mother, which devastated her. And then this horrible woman comes in and invades her family space. And she obviously, too, is probably somewhat mentally ill a little bit to begin with. And so then things sort of get triggered as the action progresses. And in this production, both parents, both Abigail and Andrew, aren't always so kind to Lizzie. Lizzie sort of gets a bum rap.
So you're very much led to believe, to sympathize with Lizzie. Not that you advocate for murder in the end, which you do get in a very explosive and very artfully done way, but I can't recommend this production enough for how clever it is.
All right, next we turn to a film first of all, we should mention that the Lizzie Borden production's at the Castle at Park Plaza through Sunday, November 24th, staged by Boston Lyric Opera. The Armstrong Lie. This is a film that's opening up on Friday. Tell us about this.
This is a really, really interesting piece because it's done by Academy Award-winning filmmaker Alex Gibney. And basically, he set out to make a story about Lance Armstrong's comeback tour for the Tour de France in 2009. This is a piece that essentially, even he admits to some degree, it was going to be a puff piece. It was just about how this miraculous man that we all know, who won the 7 consecutive tours, who battled cancer and came back, who established this great charity, how he did it all.
And then,
of course, came the admission of doping. And to his credit, Lance Armstrong gave Alex Gibney one extended interview after he had the admission with Oprah earlier this year in January. And so this is really two films. You see the Lance Armstrong who ruins lives, who lies with abandon, who does everything he can push off these doping allegations without any hint of remorse or guilt. You never see anything cross his face when he's telling these bald-faced lies, despite how you know the truth is coming out. And then you see a man who's somewhat broken but still can't quite accept his lies and mistruths.
Lance Armstrong, the Armstrong Lie. Okay, now, open studio tomorrow night at 8:30.
Yeah, just quickly, you'll see more of my interview with actor Dan Lauria, who's great, by the way. His mentors are Jack Klugman and Charles Durning. He talks about that, a story I really loved. And we'll hear from the woman behind Masterpiece, who's just written a memoir about her life and the show.
And that's Rebecca Eaton.
That's Rebecca Eaton, our colleague.
Tomorrow night at 8:30 on WGBH2, Open Studio with Jared Bowen. Thank you, Jared.
Thanks, Bob.